Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and checking on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Altmeter. Fred, hi, how are you today?
Carlos, I am fantastic. We got some beautiful weather here where I'm at. And hey, not that anyone noticed, but there was some great golf action last weekend. With big screens tuned to college football games, it was difficult to concentrate on golf. Never fear, golf fans, because the Back 9 Report is here to remedy that situation and help fellow golfaholics get caught up on every tour, tournament, and news item happening from around the world of golf. So, Carlos, let's go.
Let's go, and we have a lot of action for you, and we have two VIGs, very important guests of the week. We're going to have Tony Mancilla and Ron Green Jr., a very good friend of the show, so you don't want to miss that. But we're going to start right away, like we always do with the Weekend Backspin, and we're going to start with the major one. Not a major, but the big one this past weekend in the FedEx Cup and the PGA Tour. Ricky Fowler, he carded an eagle, two birdies, and two bogeys to win his third PGA Tour title by one stroke from Henrik Stenson, whose double bogey five at the 16th proved crucial. Stenson led by two with five holes to go, but a 40-foot birdie from Fowler at the 14th cut the deficit in half, and he kept his nerve from there on to win at the TPC Boston. Stenson was never behind until his tee shot at the par 3 16th was short and bounced into the water, and it cost him a 5. And from a one shot ahead, he trailed by a stroke after that shot. Fowler made par on the last two holes, enough to claim the title and to move to number 5 in the world rankings with a 15-under total overall. It was Stenson's second straight runner-up finish in the FedEx Cup playoffs, and he's fourth overall this year. Charlie Hoffman birdied the final two holes to sign in for 4-under 67 and take third place on 11-under. Sean O'Hara and Matt Jones both carded 3-over rounds of 74 to fall out of contention and finish in a 5-way tie for fourth on 8-under. Jason Day, no, he didn't win. He's human, yes. He proved to be human. He didn't win. But the biggest news to me is Jordan Spieth's second consecutive missed cut. The first time in his career that he's missed a cut, and what is going on? Even though he regained the number one in the world, he's missing the cut for a second time, and he appears to be lost for it. So how about the PGA Tour?
He's clearly done.
How about the FedEx Cup?
Well, Ricky Fowler, you know, says, not so fast, my friends, with that new big three stuff. I'm not too bad myself. Fowler produced another exciting win at the Deutsche Bank Championship, the second stop in the FedEx Cup playoffs, with his second win of the year on the PGA Tour and third win worldwide. Remember, he won the Scottish Open the week prior to the Open Championship in July. This was also his sixth top 10 on tour this year. He moves to number 5 in the official world golf ranking. So you've got those four young guys, Jordan, Rory, Jason Day, and Ricky, all in the top 5 there. He's number 3 in the FedEx Cup with over $5 million in earnings. Coupled with his four top 5 finishes in the majors last year, Ricky keeps his name in the conversation with Jordan Spieth, Rory McIlroy, and Jason Day as one of the best players right now. Fowler posted one eagle plus a birdie versus two bogeys on the front nine. Still trailed Stenson by three shots, but birdied 11 and 14, cut into the lead. Stenson's 7-iron on the par 3 16th, ballooned up in the air, just knocked it right out of the air and bounced down into the water. Fowler's par, put him one shot ahead, as you mentioned, and that's all he needed. Carlos, the biggest story for me out of Boston this week is even though Jordan Spieth missed his second consecutive cut, he moves back ahead of Rory McIlroy to the number one spot in the world. Boy, these guys are just going to go kind of back and forth here a little bit with this thing. Top players in the world get a well-deserved week off this week to nurse nagging injuries and get their laundry done, as the PGA Tour will take this week off before heading to Chicago for the BMW Championship next week. Most of the sports world will be glued to the NFL as it holds its first official week of games beginning Thursday night, Carlos.
Yeah, the Flate Gate is going to go out on Thursday, so we'll see what happens there. But, oh, I didn't want to say that. I'm sorry, Tom. I'm sorry. Patriots, I was really.
There's more news coming out of Boston today about the football deal. All this stuff about cheating and all that stuff. Oh, my goodness, it's too much.
Oh, my goodness. We can't do that. But anyway, we got you here. There was some other action on the other tours. This weekend, the LPGA Champions Tour and Web.com Tour were off. But, hey, there was action on the European Tour where England's Lee Slattery fought back from losing the overnight lead on the final day of the M2M Russian Open to claim his first European Tour in 4 years and second in his career. The Cheshire-based golfer began after a 2-hour fuck delay with a two-shot advantage over playing partner Stanislav Goya from Argentina and Scotland's Craig Lee, but was two behind Goya after the 12th. He rallied back and held off Goya to win by one shot. Defending champion David Horsey was also in the mix, was just two shot off Slattery in third. The win left Slattery with strong chance of securing a slot in the European Tour's season-ending DP World Tour Championship. 37-year-old Englishman moved up from 120th to 66th in the race to Dubai thanks to that win, and he's just six slots away. He's just 44,422 points short of that top 60 threshold, which he needs to surpass to be there on the finals. There was action also on the European Senior Tour. Colin Monty Montgomery, he won the Travis Perkins Masters on Sunday to become the first player in European Tour Senior Tour history to win one event three straight years. The 52-year-old Monty, he birdied a final hole for the 1-under-77 and beat fellow Scott Ross Drummond with an 18-foot birdie putt on the second playoff hole. On the Challenge Tour, the former world amateur number one Scott Arnold rallied to a maiden win in the European Challenge Tour as the Australian toppled Dutchman Dan Huizenga with an impressive back nine performance to earn a two-shot victory at the Cordon Golf Open. And in the ladies' European Tour, after three birdies in her first six holes, Denmark's Nicole Brock Larsen held a commanding 7-stroke lead. But after a back nine full of drama, she held on to win her first ladies' European Tour title in the Helsingborg Open at the Vastorps Golf Club in Sweden by one shot over South African Ashley Simon and fellow Dane Malene Jorgensen, finishing a shot further behind in third. She won the first prize of €37,500, and with that wire-to-wire win, the 22-year-old has now earned a place in this week's Evian Championship, which we'll be covering as a practice range subject today, so a little bit later on we'll talk about that. That's the final major of the year on the ladies' spread. So how about the action on the rest of the tours?
Yeah, Carlos, the only notes I have here are the European Tour, of course, you mentioned, was in Russia for the M2M Russian Open. Slattery won €166,000 for his second career European Tour win. Since 2001, Slattery has played in 287 events, made a little over 50% of his cuts, but he's only had 21 top 10 finishes in 15 years on the European Tour. He has €2.8 million, which is about $3.1 million U.S. in career earnings, proving once again you don't have to win to make a good living on the golf course, Carlos. The European Tour visits the Netherlands this week for the KLM Open. Tom Watson will tiptoe through the tulips as he ventures across the pond to make an appearance in the home of windmills and wooden shoes. On the Symetra Tour, they had a tournament last week up in South Dakota in Sioux Falls, the Sioux Falls Great Life Challenge. Caroline Westrup won, but the real story here is that there's only five events remaining to move into the top 10 on the money list to earn a 2016 LPGA Tour card. Julia Marinaro currently leads the money list with 66,000. Jimin Kang moved from 12th to 10th this week and sits squarely on the bubble with a little over 45,000 earnings. It will take approximately 55,000 more or less to get into that top 10 to earn the LPGA Tour card for next season. LPGA, we have the Comp Champions Tour, all had the week off. We're going to talk about the Evian, as you mentioned, in a little bit. Champions Tour is in the middle of taking a month off. Their next event won't be until the end of September at the Nature Valley First Tee Open at Pebble Beach, September 25th to the 27th. And the Web.com Tour is in Fort Wayne, Indiana this week for the Hotel Fitness Championship. 150 golfers vying for 25 PGA Tour cards to be handed out in 4 weeks, Carlos.
That wraps up our week in Backspin. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to have the Part 5 news presented by United Golf. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the Part 5 News, sponsored by United Golf Network. And we're going to start with the announcement of the day, announcement of the week. We're talking about President's Cup, Fred. So what do you have for us on the tee shot for the Part 5 News?
Well, they finished out the teams. As you know, over the weekend, the top 10 earned their automatic berths after the Deutsche Bank Championship. We're just 26 days away from the President's Cup, Carlos, to be held in Incheon City, Korea. We had Captain Jay Haas on Back Nine Report in June talking about the course and the team, and now here we are less than a month away from the biennial event. The one familiar name that was not on the automatic list for the first time is Phil Mickelson. This is the first time in 21 years he did not qualify on his own for a President's Cup or a Ryder Cup team. And, of course, there will be no Tiger Woods in Korea. But we're going to have a Jordan, a Bubba, a Ricky, and a DJ for the American team. So, Carlos, here are the top 10 automatic qualifiers. Jordan Spieth, Bubba Watson, Jimmy Walker, Zach Johnson, Jim Furyk, Ricky Fowler, Dustin Johnson, Patrick Reed, Matt Kuchar, and Chris Kirk. So it comes down to then Captain Jay Haas has the two captain's picks. He announced those today. Actually, this evening, just a little while ago. His first pick was his son, Bill Haas, who actually was the first non-qualifier, ranked at number 11 on the points list. So he was close, but Captain Haas overlooked J.B. Holmes, Billy Horschel, Brent Snedeker, and Webb Simpson, none of whom really have had spectacular years but have history or have some experience. His other choice is the one that kind of leaves one scratching their head. You know, I mentioned Phil Mickelson not earning his way onto the team a little bit ago. Well, it seems that Jay Haas picked a good buddy, Phil Mickelson, for his other pick. You know, in 2015, Phil has just had 3 top 10s and 18 starts. And, of course, last year he only had 1 top 10 all year. Yes, he is number 66 on the FedEx Cup, but he was number 20 in the President's Cup points list. Since June, he's just had 2 top 10 finishes in 6 starts. So, you know, with the guys he had to pick from, Brant Snedeker, Webb Simpson, Billy Horschel, and Carlos, you know who I'm going to take. I'm going to say, you know what, I'm just going to go right out and say it right now, Carlos, and we can argue about it if you want to, but this is a wasted pick for Phil Mickelson. I'm sorry. It might draw a few eyeballs for TV, may make the PGA happy. I don't know, PGA Tour happy. I don't know. But to me, it's a wasted pick. You could have gotten a young guy, like say, maybe a Brooks Koepka, who's had a pretty good year worldwide. he would have been a great pick to pick that spot, somebody who might qualify for the Ryder Cup next year, get a little bit of experience in this President's Cup thing. I just think Phil Mickelson is a totally wasted spot on this team. I'm sorry. I there's my rant for the day. You got a comment on it before I go to the international team?
No, I have to agree with you, but I'm not going to say what I was going to say. I think you said it perfectly. So, no, I agree with you. Bruce Koepka should have been that pick. I don't understand it.
Well, you do have, you know, you got kind of a nice mix, really, of a veteran and young player on the team. You got Haas, Holmes. I mean, Haas has previous experience, of course. Zach Johnson, Jim Furyk, Matt Kuchar give the veteran presence. And now with Phil, you had another veteran who will help the young guys. And these guys, Zach Johnson, Jim Furyk, Kuchar, they can play with anybody. They're great in foursomes, and they make excellent four-ball partners for a long hitter. So, I don't know. I hope Mickelson doesn't do a palace coup if things doesn't go the way he wants it to go, like he did with Tom Watson, the Ryder Cup. There's another reason I would have picked him, right?
I think that's why he picked him. He didn't want it to hear that.
Hey, KJ Choi's international team looks formidable. With Jason Day heading up a team that includes Louis Oosthuizen, Adam Scott, and Hideki Matsuyama. His automatic qualifiers, in addition to those guys, Brandon Grace, Mark Leishman, Anirban Lahiri, Charles Schwarzer, Tongchai Daiji, and Danny Lee, who slipped in at the last moment there on Sunday evening. Oosthuizen has played especially well in the majors this year. He has made the cut in all four, plus he finished runner-up the U.S. Open at Chambers Bay and the Open Championship at St. Andrews, lost out in that playoff, you remember. Danny Lee, the number 10 automatic qualifier, got in the last hole at the Deutsche Bank on Sunday. Anirban Lahiri from India, you know, won the long drive thing at the PGA Championship in Whistling Straits. Danny Lee, 45-year-old Tongchai Daiji, and Mark Leishman will be making their first appearances in a President's Cup. So KJ Choi, he is two captain's picks after the automatic 10 qualifiers, Stephen Bottage from Australia and Sangmoon Bai from Korea. So Bai is the highest-ranking Korean player, so that kind of makes sense to pick him, even though he was number 19 on the points list. Bowditch was close to qualifying on his own until Lee knocked him out on Sunday. So, and I can kind of see why you'd pick Bowditch. He had a pretty good year, won on tour. You know, the only problem with both these guys, Bowditch and Bay, it's two more rookies. So half of their team will be inexperienced in international team match play. So I don't envy Choi with that. The international team will be trying for only its second outright win when the teams meet October 8th through 11th on Korean soil. The 2003 President's Cup ended in a 17-17 tie when darkness forced stoppage of play in the playoff. The U.S. has won the last six President's Cup matches by commanding margins, but a change in the point system, which you went over last week on the show, will allow the internationals to sit players during the first four sessions and may help keep the matches a little bit closer as they can play the little bit stronger players and maybe sit some guys. So, but Carlos, looking at it from right here today, even with choosing Phil and Bill Haas, looks very much like another U.S. runaway to me. Back to you.
I'm just going to say it's not going to be a runaway. I think that change in the points, you know, those players in the international team, they have Jason Day, Adam Scott, Louis Oosthuizen, Hideki Matsuyama, and also Charles Schwartz. So those are five great players. Brandon Grace is a great player as well. Mark Leishman. I think they have a good core. They can hide their bad players now. So, you know, I don't think it's going to be a runaway. I still think the U.S. is going to win, but I think it's going to be closer and what a lot of people are thinking. I mean, Jason, they have great players on that side. So,
well, that's what the PGA Tour needs. They needed to be closer. So that's why Tim Pinchon made the changes. You know, they need it to be closer. He can say what he wants to about why he did the changes, but they need these matches to get closer or it's just going to become irrelevant. Nobody's going to watch it.
Yeah, totally agree, and I think that's going to happen this year. Well, I have some news about Keith Pelley, you know, the big chief now on the European Tour. He made his big first decision of the year on the European Tour, and that one is some controversy, you could say, and that is that Rory McIlroy will remain in the European Tour's Race to Dubai rankings, and he has a place in the final series, despite not meeting the minimum event requirements. That's what, you know, the head of the European Tour announced. McIlroy won the Race of Dubai title last year and leads this year by more than 300,000 points over Danny Willett, despite having played in 9 European Tour events this year. Louis Heisen, Justin Rose, and Brandon Grace are number 3, 4, and 5, respectively. European Tour rules stipulate that players must compete in at least 13 events to be eligible for the final series. Other commitments and rehabilitation from ankle ligament damage kept McIlroy from reaching the 13-event standard. He injured that ankle after the U.S. Open and missed the Scottish Open, British Open, and WGC Bridgestone Invitational. However, because of the exceptional circumstances surrounding the ankle injury, the 26-year-old has been granted a reprieve. Keith Bailey said in a release, and I'm going to read it to you, "I have spent the last 2 weeks examining every angle and every possible solution, and I have spoken with Rory and his team, as well as independent medical advisors and some prominent players. After reviewing and discussing all the medical reports and recommendations from orthopedic surgeon Dr. Andrew Adair, physiotherapist Dr. Steve McGregor, and our chief of medical staff, Dr. Roger Hawks, while at the same time recognizing that Rory is a world golfer with global commitments, I am convinced that he could not commit to any further tournament participation without risking further injury and persistent weakness to the ankle in the future. Therefore, after lengthy discussions, I have given McIlroy the approval to play a minimum of 12 European Tour events this year." You know, McIlroy played this weekend at the Deutsche Bank Championship near Boston, the second leg of the PGA Tour FedEx Cup playoffs. And the European Tour Series finale begins with the Turkish Airlines Open at the end of October. It also includes 2 events in China, the WGC Champions and the B&W Masters, before concluding in late November with the DP World Tour Championship in July. But I understand that if he wouldn't have injured that ankle, he would have played the Scottish Open, the British Open, and the WGC Bridgestone, and this would be just, he would have made the 13 event standard, but he's setting a very, very dangerous precedent. He might be the best player, I can understand that, and you want your best player to be on your marquee events, but, hey, what happens when somebody else, anybody, would injure their ankle? They can now come and say, hey, I want to play too because, you know, I could have played, but I couldn't, you know, I got my ankle, I just need 3 more tournaments. So I understand you can play some deference to McIlroy, but hey, if you did it with him, you have to do it with everybody else, right?
I think it sets a very dangerous precedent, Carlos. I just, you know, these tours set these final series, these playoff events up, these, you know, 4 tournaments, and they want to get their best players in there. They want to get the draw. They, you know, they got this big bonus money, you know, but, you know, they got the rules to get in, and then Pelle goes and changes them. That's, I bet there's a lot of unhappy European Tour pros right now. You know, so, you know, and Pelle shows that he's not adverse to making the tough decisions, though, man. I'll tell you what. You know, the first decision about not sanctioning the WGC Bridgestone next year as a European Tour event because it's opposite an important European Tour tournament. I'll tell you what, I have more power to him. He's not making many friends in different places, that's for sure. So the way he's starting out, I don't look for him to last too long. Hey, Carlos, you know, it's mandatory that we talk about Donald Trump, you know, on the show. You know, we've been talking about the problems that he stirred up in this country with his illegal immigrant comments and then his jump to number one in the Republican polls in the race for the president. But it seems the guardians of golf in Europe are not so enamored with their Donald's comments either. Trump has been trying to get a Scottish Open for the Turnberry course that hosted the U.S. Women's Open this year. Ex-First Minister of Scotland Alex Salmond, who was instrumental in keeping the Scottish Open on the European Tour schedule, told a Scottish newspaper the Scotsman that Trump International's bid to bring a Scottish Open to Turnberry is losing ground. He said, "It's not my decision, but I would have thought Mr. Trump's odds are lengthening as far as these matters are concerned. But he might become the president of the United States of America. He might say, do it or else." In a more serious tone, he said, "Look, let's talk positively. There's absolutely no doubt it's an absolutely great golf course. But there are things to consider in the fullness of time, and I'm sure Aberdeen Asset and the tour will be considering these matters. Obviously, the PGA of America made a decision, a quite understandable decision. Politics is a rough old trade, as Mr. Trump will find out. Sometimes you can say things when you're a television star, but not necessarily when you're a politician." Earlier this year, Trump suggested his Aberdeen area course, Turnberry, would be getting the 2017, 2019, and 2020 Scottish Opens. And there were indications an announcement was postponed at Glen earlier this year. Getting a Scottish Open for Trump Turnberry was to be seen as a first step in getting back on the Open Championship rota. Turnberry has hosted four historic Open Championships, the famous duel in the sun with Nicholson Watson in 1977, Greg Norman's win in 1986, Nick Price captured the Claret Jug there in 1994, and most recently in 2009, a 59-year-old Tom Watson nearly won but missed that short putt on the 72nd hole and then lost in a playoff to Stewart Cink. The RNA has downplayed Trump's comments as an issue for Turnberry's future Open Championship hopes. So, Carlos, you know, Donald opens his mouth, and he's got everybody in an uproar all around the golf world, so even in Europe. And I'm sure we're gonna talk some more about him. Yeah, you got some more, right?
Yeah, I think we should get also like an intro music for this section.
A funeral dirge? Is that what you're going to play?
Yeah, that would sound good. That sounds good. Hey, let's keep on there with Donald Trump and the 2015 Grand Slam of Golf, featuring the year's major champions, has been canceled as the PGA of America found it too complicated to move it from Donald Trump's national Los Angeles course. The PGA of America said Thursday in a statement, and I read it, "Due to the timing and logistics needed to stage the PGA Grand Slam of Golf to the highest standards, we are disappointed that we will not be able to conduct the event this year. This was a memorable year for major championship golf, and the PGA of America congratulates Jordan Spieth, Zach Jensen, and Jason Day on their impressive wins. We look forward to conducting PGA Grand Slam of Golf in 2016. Trump has been criticized for his controversial comments made about undocumented immigrants from Mexico while he launched his Republican candidacy for the U.S. president. And plans were made by the PGA at that time to seek out a different venue for the October 2021 event. Organizers originally hoped to find a new venue for the 36-hole exhibition, which this year was expected to feature Masters and U.S. Open winner Jordan Spieth, the Open champion Zach Jensen, and PGA champion Jason Day, who were expected to compete for this year's title alongside Martin Keimer, the winner of last year's U.S. Open and last year's Grand Slam of Golf, beating Bubba Watson on the first extra hole there at Port Royal Golf Course in Bermuda. You know, the only thing, Fred, that I would say, the PGA said that it looks forward to staging the event in 2016, but Trump still has 3 years remaining on his deal with the Grand Slam, so they have to settle that before they start doing anything about this, but certainly Trump is still getting things bumped around for him.
Yeah, I kind of thought the Grand Slam was kind of lost it here a few years ago. It just has become kind of meaningless. It's not even a good exhibition with just the four guys. And I don't know. It was there in Bermuda. Bermuda's nice, but it was there too long. You know, people got tired of looking at that. So, yeah, I don't know. This whole Grand Slam thing, it's kind of like an afterthought for me. Hey, continuing on with Donald Trump, Jaime Diaz, who we've had on the show, interviewed Donald Trump in his office. Guess what, Carly? Here's a news flash for you, okay? Donald Trump says that politicians are dishonest. Can you believe that? I find that really hard to believe.
So he's
yeah, one? Exactly. He is. The question was asked, Diaz asked Trump, "What have you learned from the presidential experience?" Trump answered, "Well, I had no idea it would be this big. Number one, because when you look at what's happened in terms of the level of popularity in the polls, I didn't think it would be that fast. And once I announced, it was like a rocket ship. Nobody thought I was going to run, and once I announced, it's gone very fast. Number two, it's a nasty business. It's nasty. You're fired. I find great dishonesty, sort of the opposite of golf. I find great dishonesty in the world of politics. Another question, does it give you hesitancy in terms of what you've gotten into? No. If anything, I'm much more glad I did now. It's what I say, make America great again. Although, that first 2 weeks was pretty rough. When I came out with that whole thing on illegal immigration, I was getting massive criticism. Rough even in the sense of the golf world reaction. How did you react when, another question Diaz asked, how did you react when the golf organizations distanced themselves when you made your comments about Mexican immigrants? Trump answered, well, I was disappointed in them. I was a little disappointed because I didn't think it was necessary. But at the same time, I know it's a part of a process, and I have great respect for Pete Bavacqua, Mike Davis, Tim Fincham, and I understand that the statements I made were very incendiary. And they had to be made because they turned out to be true. And there was a period of 1 month where there was a lot of what I call incoming. Golf was very mild in comparison. I understood the golf. I got it. I understood it. And those golf leaders, I believe, have seen what I was saying was right, and I've gotten to number one in all the polls, which is telling you that the country thinks I'm right. I can't speak for them, the golf leaders, but I feel they're very much more comfortable. So, Carlos, we've talked a lot about Donald Trump over the past month, and I'm sure we're going to continue as Trump and golf are so entwined. He has pumped so much money in the golf business over the past 10 years that he is one of the major players. The five families of golf are distancing themselves for now, but in the future, the USGA, PGA, PGA Tour, LPGA, and the RNA will have to get back in bed with him. He has the courses and the money to make things happen, and they know it. That is why I find all of this public maneuvering and postulation so interesting. What happens if he should actually win the presidency? What do they do then? They, the five ruling bodies of golf, are creating a tremendous future problem. We're just getting started on this thing, Carla. There's a lot going on with this thing.
I think they're just waiting to see what's going to happen with his candidacy. If he's going to go far, then they might start getting back on it. Because like you say, hey, without his money and those courses, what are they going to do? Look at what happened to a Grand Slam of Golf. It's just an exhibition, a bad one, like you said. And they couldn't find where to play it. You know, it's just going to happen. Sooner or later, they're going to have to get back to him. So I think they're just waiting to see what happens with him. So, and we'll keep track of that. You know, we have that section on Donald Trump almost every week here on the back. So,
Donald Trump section.
Yep, we're gonna have.
What if we get a sponsor for that?
let's talk about that. Well, Golfaholics. Hey, we're gonna have a name for it. Maybe we'll ask you to name it or something like that. We'll see what happens. Anyway, to wrap up the Par 5 news, I have two news about two events. Two new events. Let's talk about playoffs. Okay, yeah, playoffs. The Champions Tour will play an event in Richmond next season as part of the 50 and over Circuit Players Playoffs. Sponsored by Dominion Resources, the Dominion Charity Classic will be played November 4th to the 6th in 2016 on the Country Club of Virginia's James River Course. The tour said Thursday that the tournament will be the last event before the season-ending Charles Schwab Cup Championship. The PGA Tour's championship management will operate the 54-player $2 million tournament, and Steve Schofield will serve as executive director. The tour said full details of the Champions Tour playoffs will be announced in November at the Charles Schwab Cup Championship in Arizona. So every tour is getting into the playoffs. This is becoming a virus for the tours, and the Champions Tours couldn't get behind on that. But meanwhile, four of the world's major women's golf tours have launched a brand new team competition called the Queens, presented by COA, which will take place on December 4 to the 6th of this year at the Miyashi Country Club in Aichi Prefecture in Japan. Four teams of nine players from the Australian Ladies Professional Golf, the Korean Ladies Professional Golf Association, the Ladies European Tour, and the Ladies Professional Golfers Association of Japan will compete in a three-day tournament with a total purse of 100 million yen. Hey, that's about 739,000 euros. Qualification for this team is open to Ladies European team members from Europe, Middle East, and Asia, and the team of nine to be announced in October will include a team captain that will be selected by the tour. The captain will be an experienced member who has earned the respect and admiration of the golfing world and her fellow professionals. Order of Merit, the top six eligible members from the Ladies European Tour Order of Merit following the 2015 Lacoste Ladies Open de France, and the Rolex rankings, the top two eligible members from the top 100 of the Rolex World Rankings after the Sears Lacoste Ladies Open de France. If these two spots are not filled, they will be given back to the next eligible players from the Ladies European Tour Order of Merit. So players from Australia and New Zealand will be eligible for the ALPG team, with Korean and Japanese players respectively representing the KLPGA and the JLPGA. The format will be match play with a combination of foursomes, four ball, and singles, spanning the 3 days and a point system to decide the winning team. The challenging West Course at the Miyashi Country Club will be a fitting venue as it has previously hosted several championships, including the Munsingware Ladies Tokai Classic, the Tokai Ladies Classic, and Japan's Women's Open in 1998. So this tournament is one of several edgy concepts recently developed by the Ladies European Tour. That includes broadcasting premium events for free live on YouTube and a testing of Wednesday final round in Turkey in order to avoid the oversaturated weekend sports television schedules, thereby generating more media exposure for the women's sports worldwide. So I just going to go out on a limb. Nobody has asked me, but I think Korea is going to be winning this year in, year out. So that's all I'm going to say.
You think they might have an edge here?
I don't know. They should have taken them out. They wanted this.
Well, you know, this is a step towards what I kind of thought, you know, would happen. I mean, with all the large corporations in Japan and Asia and the money in China, I really expected some kind of an Asian U.S. competition. You know, this is a little different than that, but you've got Korea, Japan, Australia, and then the Ladies European Tour coming into this thing. So no U.S. involvement there, which kind of surprises me in a little bit. They're just sticking with the Solheim Cup. You know, we'll see. I'll bet the U.S. gets in there some
place. Maybe they're just watching. They're just going to watch and see. Let's see how it goes. If it's good, they'll approach them and do something. You'll see.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Carlos, that wraps up the Par 5 news for September the 9th, 2015. It's presented by United Golf Network, who wants every golfer to enjoy the game more and have the opportunity to earn money while doing it. Talking to some people from UGN this week, and they just have some great deals on travel. Now's the time of the year that we up north here start to think about our winter travel for January, February, March, where we're going to go play, what we're going to do. And I would urge anyone that's in that situation looking for their group or looking to go south to check out what they've got for Myrtle Beach and Hilton Head and some of the other places they've got deals for. So that's just one thing. You can also earn commissions through their director's program, Global Affinity, MyGolf in U.S., all that good stuff. You can catch it at UnitedGolfNetwork.com, Carlos.
That wraps up our Par 5 news presented by United Golf Network. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we have two interviews on our VIGs, very important guests of the week, Tony Manchilla and Ron Green Jr. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our very important guest of the week, our VIGs. We're going to start with Tony Mancilla. He's the Island Resort and Casino General Manager. This is the home to the award-winning Sweetgrass Golf Club and a variety of other entertainment and leisure amenities. And he, before that, was the tribal attorney for the Hanoville Indian Community, which owns and operates the resort, and he's also the co-chair for the Island Resort Championship, which is a Symetra Tour road to the LPGA Professional Golf Tournament played there at the Sweetgrass Golf Club annually. So, Fred, tell us a little bit about this interview with Tony Mancilla.
Yeah, Carlos, I had the chance to visit the Island Resort and Casino last week in the UP of Michigan. I was completely blown away and surprised by what I saw there. They have a first-class golf facility with their Sweetgrass course, and they're in the process. They just announced the construction of a second 18-hole championship course that will rank among the best in the state of Michigan, if not the whole northern part of the United States. Mr. Mancilla is passionate about his golf and realizes the importance that golfers bring to his resort. Table games and alcohol sales increase exponentially when groups come in there to play. They currently have a package, I think I mentioned it, and we mentioned it in the tape, where you can play Timberstone and Gray Walls, which Gray Walls is critically acclaimed as one of the great golf courses in Michigan now for a tremendous price. But then when they add their second course there, which I think will open in 2017, they're really going to have a great product. So while we see golf courses closing everywhere else, the Island Resort is expanding their golf presence. So, good interview. We got the chance to talk with Tony Mancilla from Island Resort and Casino.
We were talking with Tony Mancilla, who is the general manager of the Island Resort and Casino here in Harris, Michigan. It's in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. And we had a chance to come up and look at the facility the last couple of days, play the golf course. And Tony, quite honestly, very impressed with what you've got going here. How long have you been in business, and how did you get started up here?
Well, we've had a casino since 1985, so 30 years. I've personally been here for 18 of that. We've grown since 1985. We went from a pole building. We came out on the road and had a little 28-unit motel. Then we added 113 rooms, a tower in 1997. 2005 to 2007, we added another 225 rooms. So we have 325 rooms here, 1,200 slots, 30 table games, bingo, four restaurants, a golf course, and a convention center.
Yeah, you know, and when people think about Escanaba, Michigan, you're right here by Escanaba, just inside from Wisconsin a little bit. They don't really think about really nice golf courses. You think about the Great Lakes and the outdoor activities. But you have really built a wonderful golf course here with Sweetgrass.
Oh, yeah, we're real proud of it. It's, like I said, out of 800 public courses in the state, we're number 13. So we bring a really top-notch course. It's always in great condition, and it changes every day with the wind.
And Island Resort kind of realizes that to draw the kind of clients that you want to keep the casino going and strong and everything that surrounds that, golf is a big motivator for that, so you're going to build a second course.
Absolutely. What we found is that our golf clientele, we roughly have about 16,000 rounds a year. Those folks come up, they're looking for a good time, they want to play good golf, and so they're really the icing on the cake for us. We have a strong group of golfers, and they come back year after year. So we're trying to give them something else. We want to expand the stay for them, the experience. So we're building a second golf course that's 180 degrees different than this one, but it'll be just as fun.
So I know you've mentioned to me that you kind of follow the Tom Kaiser model about when you have two golf courses, then you have a real resort and you have people give people a reason to come and stay. So with that, you've got some the property you're going to use has some unique features, and you're going to really make a wonderful golf course there.
Oh, absolutely. It's built on a hill. It has a 120-foot ridge, 120-foot drops. So we're going to have a lot of downhill dramatic holes, a lot of uphill holes, a lot of side hill holes. There won't be anything level about it. It's going to be very unique, and it's going to be designed to be fun.
So this will truly be a golf destination. You're going to have two fantastic golf courses. You have spa, you have the casino, you got Grace restaurants. So it looks like you've got a total package for someone that wants to come to the Upper Peninsula in Michigan and really do it right.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the golf course, everyone we just want them to stay another day with us. And we have the nice rooms. But the spa, I really can't understate how big that's going to be for us. You know, 85% of the golfers here are men, and 85% of the people that go to spa are women. So that number really works well for us. So they can come, go to the spa, or they can golf, or they can do both. So that's really why we added that.
And we should mention, if you look on a map, the Upper Peninsula is kind of up here. You got to come across the bridge or come around through Wisconsin. But you also have air service in here from Detroit and some of the major airports.
Yeah, we're actually surrounded by airports. We have one in Escanaba that has direct flights right down to Milwaukee and Detroit and Minneapolis. And we also have Marquette, which actually triples the number of flights coming in the area. So within an hour, you got a lot of flight options.
Now, you have two other courses here right now. I believe it's Timberstone and Gray Walls that you offer a really great package if somebody's looking to plan some different golf courses now, even if they wanted to come now.
Oh, absolutely. Gray Walls is number 3 or 4 in the state of Michigan. Timberstone's in the top 10. So right here within an hour of each other, you have three courses in the top 13. You can play and stay at the hotel two nights for under $200 to play the whole package. It's pretty spectacular.
So there's great golf here now. You got the wonderful casino. You're going to have a brand new course sometime in 2017?
Yeah, we're looking at August of 2017. We hope we're going to have a soft opening and then have a grand opening in the year after.
So if people are looking to finalize some vacation plans or looking for someplace a little bit different to go, look up Island Resort on the Internet and check them out, and you may want to come up here and spend a couple days.
Absolutely. We'd love to have them. We're about an hour and 45 minutes north of Green Bay. It's a real easy drive, and so there's a lot here to do. There's just not resort stuff, too. We have the Great Lakes within 15 miles of us. There's fishing. There's boating. There's a lot of things you can do out here.
Well, Tony, thanks so much for taking time to talk to us, and we really enjoyed spending a couple days here.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
That was the interview with Tony Mancia. And, you know, that tribal council there, that two-year $8 million project, it's going to be that second golf course that you spoke about, the full-service spa, expansion of the existing island bar, the renovation of the bingo hall, redesign of the hotel exterior. So they're really putting some money, big money, on this one. And really, they have seen themselves grow as a leader there in the Midwest gaming resort and golf arena, as well as offering their employment opportunities to over 700 people, Fred.
Yeah, it's you know, it's just a really win-win for that whole area. You know, the Upper Peninsula of Michigan is not what you would call a real economic opportunity type area. So they were looking for things to create jobs and bring some money into the area, and these casinos have been a home run. The tribe runs them, and they are, you know, the people that are in positions of power or of management are all tribal people, and they are just doing a fantastic job with this place. I can't say enough how impressed I was. We didn't even touch on the food, Carlos, and I'm telling you what, honest to goodness, I ate so much. The food was so good. I was actually in physical pain when I got back to my room. My wife was laughing at me because I was trying to talk to her on the phone, and I was in real pain. The food is just outstanding there, in addition to all the other activities you have. So I was really surprised. I was not expecting how nice that the Island Resort really is.
I'm really upset at you that you didn't speak to him about food, which is my favorite subject. But it's okay. I'll let you go with that. No problem. Let's go now to our second interview, and that's with Ron Green Jr., a very good friend of the show. He's been here before. He's a writer for the Global Gulf Post and also an author. And, Fred, what did you talk about with Ron Green Jr. today?
Yeah, I saw a piece that he wrote about Lee Trevino working at the Greenbrier this summer. It was posted in today's Global Golf Post, and so I quick sent him a note asking him if he would have a few minutes to talk about it with me, and he said he did. So we just taped that this afternoon, so if you want to go ahead and play that, Carlos.
We want to welcome Ron Green Jr., senior golf writer for Global Golf Post, back to the Back Nine Report. Hey, Ron, thanks for taking some time out of your day to chat with us.
Happy to do it. Happy to get talk a little golf here.
Hey, you had a piece in Global Golf Post today that came out today because Monday was a holiday, so it came on Tuesday this week. Earlier this year, James Justice, who owns the Greenbrier, announced that Tom Watson would no longer hold the post of golf professional emeritus, a position that legendary Sam Snead held for many years. Justice wanted someone that could spend more time around the resort in the summer months, and Watson just couldn't spare that much time. So the solution was to hire six-time major champion and Hall of Fame member Lee Trevino. How did that all come about? What all instigated that, do you know?
Well, I think when Jim Justice went looking for somebody, Trevino's name came up, and I think he as we've seen by the success of the golf tournament, Mr. Justice is very persuasive and convinced Lee to come up there and spend his summers at the Greenbrier. Bert Bain, the director of golf up there, I think is a longtime friend of Lee's, which probably helped. But it's a pretty, from what I can tell, a pretty good gig he's got up there, going and spending most of his summers at the Greenbrier. His big complaint this year was that he had commitments that forced him to leave in the middle of August rather than stay through the end of September, which he said he will do in the future because he likes it so much. And you know, I think he hangs around and sort of spends his days being Lee Trevino, giving some lessons, hitting some balls, playing some golf, and just enjoying all that the Greenbrier has to offer.
I was a little bit surprised that he would do this, actually. You know, at the age of 75, it seemed like he was kind of enjoying his time, spending his time at home in Dallas. He had become one of the senior members, along with Palmer and Nicklaus and Player, whenever anybody wanted some historical background or data on something. He was kind of one of the seniors in residence that everybody would go to take on this new job. You know, that's kind of surprising, didn't you think?
Yeah, I was a little surprised. I think, yeah, he had settled very nicely into his life in Dallas there, and but I just think when he got up there and looked around and saw what's going on, and he's got his hand involved in another golf course with Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer and Gary Player up there. And I think, you know, as he said more than once, the reality of the 105-degree summer days in Dallas versus being up there in the mountains where it might top out in the low 80s when it's really hot, I think was very appealing. And, he, you know, I told him, I don't do banquets in the evening and things like that, but I'm happy to teach. I said, I love to be with people. And in typical Trevino style, he said, you know, I get new people coming in every 2 or 3 days, so my stories stay new. He said, back home, everybody knows all my stories, so they're not funny anymore. But here I get a new audience almost every day.
Yeah, that's part of the deal. He does have stories. He loves to talk and loves to be around people. So, as you mentioned, he just gets to be himself and just kind of hang out in a beautiful setting there.
Yeah, I mean, it's a gorgeous place. I've been fortunate enough to go up and cover the Greenbrier Classic the last 2 years. And, you know, it's got an ideal date, 4th of July up there. I mean, if you've ever been to the Greenbrier, you know what I'm talking about. If you haven't, it's just a magnificent, just great giant white building that sprawls all over the place, and just there's an elegance to it, and I mean, it's straight out of a Norman Rockwell print, although I will admit that the prices are probably a little more than Mr. Rockwell's era had, because they're not afraid to get the full price for things, but boy, it's just a lovely place. The golf tournament's turned into something really good. You know, Tiger played up there this year, and I really, it's one of the ones I look forward to going to every year.
Yeah, you know, along that line, I had the chance to go there last summer, and about this time of year, actually, and spent a couple days, got to play the Greenbrier, got to play the TPC Old White, spend a night there in the hotel, and do the tour, and you know, I've been wanting to go there for many, many years, and finally got to go. I had pretty high expectations, and you know how those things work, but the Greenbrier met my expectations and exceeded them. So it is really a beautiful, beautiful place. But hey, let's one more topic I want to touch base with you on. In your article, you talk a little bit about Trevino and the Masters. Of course, he won all the other majors. He was a six-time major champion, but he never won the Masters. And matter of fact, he even kind of boycotted it in 1970, 1971, and again in 1974. So can you give us a little background on that and kind of what his thinking was back then?
Well, at the time, Trevino just sort of said the golf course just doesn't fit him, that he sort of hit a low ball, hit a cut, and just said it didn't work, that you needed to move the ball right to left more than he did, although Jack Nicklaus, as I recall, did pretty well at Augusta hitting a high fade too. So, you know, and Trevino said, you know, it was not the golf course. It was never the golf course. He just didn't feel comfortable there. He and Clifford Roberts got off on the wrong foot, and Trevino took it personally, and it became, just a thorn to him. He didn't like it, and so he just chose rather than go down there and let himself get angry or get frustrated about whatever bothered him. He just chose to stay away for 3 or 4 years during the prime of his career when he was a really good player. And I'll get my numbers wrong probably, but he led the tournament after 36 holes a couple times, I think. And, I mean, Trevino, for those of us who got to see him as prime, he could play anywhere, and he could beat anybody. And he regrets now not giving himself a better chance to win the Masters because, I mean, that's the one that sort of stayed out there that he didn't get. But, yeah, he said it was largely just a personality conflict with Clifford Roberts. Now, Clifford Roberts intimidated a lot of people and had his own direct style and didn't, you know, Trevino was probably not alone, but I think his decision was such a high-profile case that, you know, as he looks back on it now, he loves the Masters, loves Augusta National, and was telling me stories about, you know, when Nicklaus won or other times he's been in airports watching it with people and just, you know, he said, I look forward to those weekends now when they play, so I sit there and spend my days watching it.
Yeah, as you mentioned, it kind of led to one of his biggest regrets that he didn't take it more seriously and win one.
Yeah, I think if he could do it over, I think he would alter it. He still, to this day, talks about how he's not a fan of Clifford Roberts and the way he did things. But, that was Lee's choice or, you know, his interpretation and the way he took it. And, too bad. It'd be cool to think that Trevino could still be walking around there under the tree with a green jacket on. I mean, who knows if he'd ever won. But you can't win if you don't play.
And telling the stories at the Masters dinner on Wednesday evening.
That would be, man, it's good enough as it is. Just imagine if he were in there.
Yes. Hey, you know, to wrap this up, Trevino had, you know, he had several marriages, a couple different families, and he's had some financial problems along the way. But at this stage of life, he seems to be pretty happy and in a pretty good place.
I think so. I mean, he seemed very happy up there when I saw him, and I've been around him a good bit through the years. We had a mutual friend who spent a lot of time with and watched him. And, you know, when we talk, we watch all these guys today play golf, and he didn't hit it as far as those guys did. I mean, nobody did. But as ball strikers go, he's on the very short list of the best ball strikers ever. He had told a great story about finishing fifth in his first U.S. Open, and the next week they're playing somewhere in Ohio or something, and he's hitting balls out there. Bob Golby walks by and is watching him in that sort of unusual little bit of action Trevino had. And he stops Nicklaus and says, what do you think of this? And Jack says, well, at least that swing repeats, which is the first step. And Golby sort of said, he might linger for a few weeks or something, but he's not going to last. And Trevino says, I still remind Golby of that every time I see him because, I mean, he played golf differently but was just, I mean, so much fun to watch. I was a huge fan. You know, he was one of the early guys who figured out you can use the crowd to your advantage, and he won them over. And, I mean, when he was on TV playing in those majors, I mean, that was must-see television.
Well, Ron, I agree with you 100%. I was a huge fan also. I followed his career very intently and always loved to watch him. And matter of fact, I tried to copy his swing for many years. So without that much success, but I love to watch old clips of his swing today. I really, the extension and the width that he gets and the action he has, I think it's really, guys should really look at that. He was a great, great ball striker. Well, listen,
absolutely.
Ron, again, I want to thank you for coming on and talking to us. Ron Green, senior writer for Global Golf Post, has a great article about Lee Trevino and the Greenbrier in this week's Global Golf Post. So if you haven't, check it out. Ron, thanks again, sir.
Thanks. Look forward to talking again soon.
Fred, as usual, a great interview, a great guy to talk about, and so much knowledge about the game of golf.
Oh, Ron Green's been around. He learned at the knee of his father, who was a great golf writer, a sports writer, and Ron has continued on and has so much knowledge and been around so much. And I always enjoy talking to him when I get to see him and talk to him.
I have just one more question before we move on. Is at what time and period of time did you try to copy Lee Trevino's swing?
Well, it was back in the I started playing golf in 1969, 1970, but probably in about 75, 76-ish, somewhere along in there. I really liked the way he swung through the ball. I felt the way that he held the club off as he went through the ball. He was more of a pusher. Rather, he didn't roll his wrist really through the shot, and I believe in that very much today, and I teach that a lot, Carlos, actually. That's a kind of a core of how I teach. So things have changed over the years, but I still love to watch him swing, the old clips of him swinging when he was, in his 20s and 30s.
So that's the reason why you never turned pro, because you tried to copy,
yeah.
But couldn't replicate it. Right?
Well, I was never near good enough for something like that, but I sure like to play.
So now you say, do as I teach, not as I say. So
that's exactly.
That's what I will always say, that amazing accuracy that he had. Wow, what a great player he was. Anyway, that wraps up our VIG's very important guest of the week segment. One more break before we come back, which will be the practice range and our final pots. So don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back.
Hey, Carlos, before you get into the practice range, just before we get away from that last point we were talking about real quick, this can kind of go along from a golf tip kind of thing, but Trevino was one of the first guys to use his core. And, the modern golf swing today is all based on turning your core, your shoulders, your hips, your legs. And Trevino did that just because that was his natural motion. He took the hands and arms out of the swing so he could be consistent and square that club face up every time. That's really why I liked it. I liked the consistency that his swing produced.
And just on that notice, I know that some time ago Golf Digest had published an article that was called 10 Rules for Hitting All the Shots, and that was by Lee Trevino, and wow, it's a great thing. So if you can read it, great thing, 10 great rules from Lee Trevino to hitting all the shots. So let's go now to the practice range. Every week, Fred and I pick a topic and we take our shots at it. This week, we're going to talk about the Evian Championship, because the LPGA Tour will make a stop at one of France's paradises, Evian Le Bans and to play the Evian Championship this weekend. And the course for the tournament is the Evian Masters course at the Evian Resort Golf Club, which is a picturesque one which overlooks Lake Geneva. This will be the last major of the season and also the last tournament before embarking into the 2015 Solheim Cup Adventure. The Evian Championship was founded back in 1994 on the Ladies European Tour as the Evian Masters, and it's one of two major championships on the Ladies European Tour. It became an LPGA Ladies European Tour co-sanctioned event in 2000, and in July of 2011, it was announced that beginning 2013, the Evian Masters would be renamed the Evian Championship, would become the fifth major on the LPGA Tour schedule. Susan Pedersen won the event on its inaugural year as a major, although only three rounds were played that year due to the weather. She was able to put on a ball-striking clinic to add a second major title to her career. Lydia Ko was runner-up that year, and after her second solo place, decided to turn pro. In 2004, last year, Hyo-Yu Kim, she showed the calm of a veteran and held off Cary Webb to win her first LPGA major victory. Kim was just one shot back off the lead as she entered the 18th hole and sank a 12-foot birdie putt to take the trophy. With her win, Hyo-Yu became the third youngest major winner at 19 years and 2 months. The field this week will be completed by a total of 120 players from the LPGA and the LET. Hyo-Yu Kim will be attempting to defend her title she won last year as a non-LPGA player. In Bay Park will be attempting to win her third major championship of the year and eighth of her career, and finally silence everybody by winning this one as a major. Hyo-Yu Kim, she has already, talking about Park, she has already won the KPMG Women's PGA Championship and the RICO Women's British Open. Brinley Lincecum, won the A&A Inspiration, and non-LPGA member Angie Chun won the U.S. Women's Open. All of them have won a major this year. So an in-Bay Park win would give her the 2 points she needs to reach the required 27 points needed for the Hall of Fame. A minimum of 10 years played on the LPGA Tour is required to be inducted into the LPGA Hall of Fame, so she's in her ninth year. So if she wins the years, she will get the points, and next year she can become eligible. But both of those players must be careful. The likes of Lydia Ko, Stacey Lewis, Susan Pedersen, Lexi Thompson, Soyeon Ryu, Michelle Wee, Cary Webb, Brooke Henderson, all are very capable of winning here. In fact, all the big names will be here with the exception of Na-Yeon Choi. In Ji Shu, who won the U.S. Open, and In Young Ko, who finished second at the RICO Women's British Open, are the only big-name non-LPGA members in attendance. Fred, the weather forecast calls for Thursday and Friday to be mainly sunny and dry, but the weekend is expected to be more unsettled with cloudy conditions and some showers of periods of light rains, and the wind should be light, so that could change the complexity of the tournament in the weekend. So how about the Evian Championship?
Yeah, they're kind of at elevation there. They're, you know, up in the Alps there a little bit, across Lake Geneva from Switzerland, on the border of France there. Beautiful scenery around that golf course. Every year I just marvel at the camera work there. But the weather has been an issue the last several years there. Tremendous rains they had a couple years ago. It rained out the last round. But if the weather cooperates, it's a beautiful, beautiful venue. As you mentioned, Hyo-Yu Kim is the defending champion. TV, it's going to be on TV starting September 10th, 5 to 8 a.m. on the Golf Channel. They will replay it 9:30 to 12:30. The next day, they're on from 9:30 to 12:30, and then they do a 5 to 8 a.m. again. So they have the coverage also on Saturday from 6:30 to 11:30 a.m., and then NBC picks up the coverage 12:30 to 2 on Sunday. So Golf Channel and NBC are covering it. It'll be on early morning and early afternoons, basically, if you want to try and watch it. Talk a little bit about favorites. You covered pretty much most of the favorite names that I found. Can Lydia Ko get her first major? She was T3 at the Ricoh Women's British Open, which was the last major contested. She's coming off a win at the Canadian Pacific Women's Open in August. So, you know, she had a runner-up here in 2013, so she knows how to play the golf course. Suzanne Pedersen, you know, she had some pretty good success here a couple years ago with that win. She needs a good signature win to kind of get her career back going again. NB Park, what can you say? She won here in 2011 before it was a major, so she has some good memories of the golf course. She's only won two majors this year, the KPMG Women's PGA and the Women's British this year. She finished third at the U.S. Women's Open and T11 at the A&A Inspiration. So you know she wants to add her name to another major trophy. You know, she has to be the number one favorite going in. Yanni Tsang, she's on the rebound. She's won five majors in 3.5 years, got to be number one and kind of fell off the map, but she's been feeling much better of late. I didn't hear you mention Lexi Thompson. She's been playing very well recently. Is always a factor in any time you tease it up. In her last five starts, she has a win and three top tens. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Lexi up to top the leaderboard. Stacey Lewis, been consistent all year. Just doesn't have much to show for it. She did have a runner-up, the A&A Inspiration. Was third at the U.S. Women's Open in June. And, oh, yeah, she has 11 top tens and is third the money list behind Envy and Lydia. So it hadn't been a terrible year, but, you know, she could use a major to kind of round out, kind of fill up, make 2015 seem a little bit more fulfilling, I guess. Maybe the hottest player in the tour right now, Jay Marie Green. She was ranked number 203 in the Rolex rankings as late as July 6th. But in her last seven events, she's had five top 20s and two top 10s. So she jumped clear up to number 97 in the Rolex rankings. So, you know, can she be a factor in a major? Don't know. She's hot right now. And then, you know, my favorite, somebody we've been watching all summer, Carlos, Brooke Henderson. She's been tearing up the LPGA and the Symetra Tour. Wins on both tours and now a full LPGA Tour member. With a good finish, she can get into the Asian swing, and I wouldn't be surprised if she even won. So, Carlos, one of the big storylines this week at the Evian is that it's the last full field event of the year, and it's essential for players to end the week inside the top 100 to be eligible for the invites to the five Asian swing events, plus Lorena Ochoa's Invitational, and only the top 72 get into the CME Group Tour Championship in November. So, on the bubble, you've got Maria Hernandez, who's number 103, Thedapa Suwanapura, who is 102, Joanna Clatton, who's 101, Soobin Kim, 100. Then, just inside 100, you've got Jody Yort-Shadoff, Baylen Mozo, Sedina Parks, and Sarah Kemp. So, they're going to be looking to stay inside the 100, and those couple others are going to look to try and bump somebody out and so they can play on the Asian swing, Carlos.
And to say that, you know, of those 120 players, there are going to be 27 that are going to be making their first appearance at this championship. Five Americans, four Koreans, three Taiwanese, two South Africans, and representatives from the UK, Ireland, Switzerland, Thailand, France, Denmark, and Spain, all speaking the language of golf. But only one player has won on the first attempt, and that was Paula Creamer back in 2005. So, Fred, this is the 24th tournament of 31 on the LPGA schedule, fifth and final major of the year. It offers 625 points for the race to the CME. So this is getting close now to the nitty-gritty of it. Next week, the ladies are going to be at the Solheim Cup. So any final words before we go for our final putts?
No, it should be a really good week. Even though the PGA Tour is taking the week off, you've got this major for the LPGA Tour, so it's going to be the focus. You've got the Wedbach.com Tour starting their final series with the top 75 from the Wedbach.com Tour money list and the number 126 through 200 from the PGA Tour trying to earn their card back for next season here in Fort Wayne. So two things to watch for, and then the little tournament inside the tournament for those girls trying to get inside the top 100 to get some extra play over in Asia and make the CME Group Tour Championship.
So that wraps up our practice range. And now we go for our final putts. And Fred, again, I think you have something about Donald Trump. What do you have on your final putts?
Yeah, I do have a couple more things here. Donald, I mean, his people are just doing a wonderful job keeping his name out there, aren't they? He should pay them a bonus, probably. His golf company has made an audacious bid to slash its local property taxes by 90% at Trump National Golf Club in Briarcliff Manor. You know, I go down here and talk to my local real estate tax people, and I say, hey, I just want to cut it by 10 or 15%, and they just laugh at me. And Donald, he wants to do it by 90%. So if Trump gets this thing done in Ossining, New York, the property taxes on the 140 acres will plummet from $471,000 to $47,000, with the club's neighbors picking up the $424,000 difference. He would save the most in school taxes. The club's bill will drop from $287,000 to $32,000. I just don't see this happening, Carlos, but more power to him. Trump National also pays taxes to the village of Briarcliff Manor, the town of Ossining, and Westchester County. As you can imagine, though, the neighbors around Briarcliff Manor are not too excited about the tax proposal. One of the neighbors said he's going to pass the tax burden on to everybody else, and we still won't get to play his golf course. No, you won't. And then one other thing, it seems that not all the players have been that happy with all the changes that Gilhan's made at Trump's Doral, especially to the Blue Monster, which is the site of the WGC Cadillac Championship each March. Brant Snedeker was one of the players that offered suggestions how they might make the change the course a little bit. Snedeker said, I just went over some changes to make it more friendly for guys who hit it my length. Instead of it being a bomber's paradise, I think Gilhan's tried to do the right thing to tighten it up, but it's hard to see how a golf course plays until the guys play it. You don't know what bunkers are in play or out of play. So there has been some complaints that the course plays easier for longer hitters, too much demanding play for the shorter hitters. So they're going to do some changes mostly on the bunkering on six holes, number 2, 6, 7, 12, 14, and 17. Also, Mark Rolfing, my last story here, is that Mark Rolfing is undergoing some treatment for cancer and surgery. Golf Channel has reported that NBC On Course announcer Mark Rolfing will be missing for the rest of the season as he's required surgery to remove a cancer cyst and is currently in the second stage of treatment. Rolfing, in a statement, said, Debbie, his wife, and I would like to thank everyone for their incredible support and well wishes, which have been incredibly valuable. My doctors and I are confident that by the end of the next phase of treatment, this cancer will be cured. He is over in Hawaii, at his home in Hawaii, recuperating. He has to come back to begin some treatments back in Houston again in a few weeks, the radiation. But he is going to try and be back working for NBC when the tour gets to Kapalua for the Hyundai Tournament of Champions, Carlos.
Well, I also have three pieces of news, and I'm going to start with a sad one, just like yours, with this one. I'll start with this one first. I want to end the show on a low note. So two people died after an unusually strong storm system moved through the Northwest last week, bringing down trees and causing power outages. Gig Harbor police reported that a man died when a tree fell onto his car. That man was Jamie Fay, 36 years old, and who was driving home from a trip to Costco with his 3-year-old daughter in the backseat. The girl, fortunately, was not hurt. But Faye was an assistant general manager at Chambers Bay Golf Course in University Place, and he was the son of former longtime USGA executive director David Faye. So our condolences go to him and his family for that loss. A very unfortunate thing there that that tree fell right onto him. Some more news. John Solheim, the chairman and CEO of Ping, will be awarded the coveted Lifetime Achievement Award at this year's HSBC's Golf Business Forum, which will take place at the Pudong Shangri-La Hotel in downtown Shanghai from the 1st to the 4th of November this year. John is being recognized for his outstanding contribution to the world of golf, as well as his achievement, leadership, and innovation within the business of golf. He's a very deserving winner of this year's award. He's the son of Ping founder Carsten Solheim and was appointed president of the parent company in 1995 before becoming the chairman and CEO in 1997. The award is being presented for the 10th successive year, and John will join a list of illustrious winners, including last year's recipient Peter Dawson, the outgoing chief executive of the RNA, PGA Tour Commissioner Tim Fincham, as well as standout contributors to the professional game, Jack Nicklaus, Arnold Palmer, and Gary Player. So he's in great list there. And finally, my final news piece here is Keegan Bradley and Jillian Stacey have been an item for more than 2 years, but over the weekend, the couple took it to the next level. We don't have any details on how the marriage proposal went down, but we know from Jillian that it happened and that she said yes. She announced the news on Twitter with a photo of them saying, and I quote, "He made me the happiest girl in the world over the weekend. I get to spend the rest of my life with my best friend." Well, looking for that to that picture, I might say that it looks like Keegan might have to win the FedEx Cup to pay the rest for that rock that he put on that ring. So they celebrated later on a Boston Red Sox game. Keegan was ranked number 71 in the FedEx Cup and race and moved up to 63 with his T25 finish. So congratulations to him on that and to a newly engaged on our best wishes go along. Well, that will wrap up this week's program, Golfaholics. That wraps up another week of the Backman Report presented by eDraft.com. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Thank you for listening to us for the past hour and a half. Special thanks to our VIGs, very important guest out the week, Tony Mancia, the GM of the Island Resort and Casino, and Ron Green Jr. from the Global Golf Post. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio, and also to tune in or download our show on iTunes. If you haven't done so, follow the show. Our Twitter ID is at Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.